Hello, and welcome to this edition of Because You Can't Read All the Time with myself and Irish cockfight impresario, Aaron. Aaron?
Cheerio.
Cheerio, and ahoy hoy to you, good listeners in podcast land. We have a very special edition of this. It's sort of a landmark episode, I would say, because I don't know whether or not you realized it, but we had been maintaining, Aaron and myself, an Amy Winehouse death watch, and we have to discontinue that death watch as of tonight.
Yeah, I mean, not as of last weekend.
As of when she died tonight, a week later.
But, you know,
we're just now finding out. Despite maintaining a death watch, we didn't know.
Well, we were new to the Death Watch community. I mean, we only had a Death Watch for 2011.
We didn't know a lot of the protocol.
But it was a successful run.
Yeah. Up until this point, we had been doing a pretty good job. You know, we had a database that had all the data. We had the... Hitchens is crying. He's very upset. We had a... You know, we had pictures, we had the man on the street running the interviews. It was a real live, honest to gosh, death watch.
Yeah, we have a lot of databases now that I think of it.
Yeah, well, I have the one about, what was my other database? it was about Jason Priestley, wasn't it?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. There's just so many, you know?
I have a volunteer run Jason Priestley database, and then we had the Amy Winehouse one, which was not staffed by volunteers. We manned it ourselves directly.
We did get some public funding for it, but
yeah,
I mean, that's just the way it goes these days.
I was trying to register it as a 501c3 nonprofit.
Well, we would have had to, what with the debt ceiling thing.
Which is what we had wanted to talk about, but it was too complicated.
And also, I would just get into this long conversation about how the government doesn't care about black people.
Or George Bush.
Yeah, the government doesn't care about George Bush either. So. Let's just point those both out.
Don't get Aaron started on the government's sad neglect of George Bush.
Both of them.
It's like they never existed. I don't know. I never thought about it, but I think you might have a point there. I've never thought about it despite the fact that you talk about it all the time. I'm just now thinking about it. My eyes have been opened.
I'm glad I finally got through.
Yeah, thanks. I think this is a message more people need to hear. You can find out more on Aaron's The Government Doesn't Care About George Bush podcast called The Government Doesn't Care About George Bush.
Look for it in the fall.
Okay. It's look for it around the time of the Mayan end of the world prophecy.
Yeah, look for most things that I promise you around that.
Aaron's really counting on the Mayan end of the world prophecy coming true.
I just made a lot of promises, okay?
I really need for that to happen so I don't have to follow through on some pretty difficult things. Aaron was going to bring us all the man on the moon, I believe, on that date.
The secret is that I'm that man on the moon.
Oh, well, that's convenient. So it really wouldn't have been that much work for you to produce for everyone, but okay. So anyway, we're bringing our Amy Winehouse Death Watch to a close tonight, even though it is roughly a week and a half after the fact. But we were just reluctant to let go. We'd given months of our lives to this Death Watch. It was not easy.
It makes everything so final. I mean,
yeah,
that's sad.
That's true. It's super sad. I would also like to point out that I found out about this from the Facebook. I just went and, like, all these people were like, oh my god, Amy Winehouse is dead, I can't believe it. And I'm like, really, you can't believe? She was so healthy. She had everything going for her.
Well, it's funny because her family is actually making that argument that, oh, she finally had her life on track. And
she just died.
she had a boyfriend and all this stuff. And but I mean, this is the same family that's arguing that she didn't die from a drug overdose. She died from alcohol withdrawal.
Yeah,
which I don't know that I understand.
She died from quitting alcohol cold turkey. I don't know. I don't want to risk that, though.
Well, I've been upping my alcohol intake just in case.
I've been upping it steadily.
Gotta build a resistance.
Right. I'm like Carrie Elwes in The Princess Bride trying to build up a resistance to Iocane powder. But I'm doing that with booze.
Which is really the healthier alternative.
So someday when I meet a crazed genius and I best his Spaniard and his giant, and he challenges me to a drink-off, I'll live and he'll drink himself to death.
It's a grim future.
Well, no grimmer than The Princess Bride.
I maintain my stance.
The grimmest of all films. So bleak. The Princess Bride, huge downer. Sometimes if I just want to be depressed, I'm like, oh, should I watch Requiem for a Dream or The Princess Bride? I don't know. They're both so sad. And they both have a scene of an old man yelling, ass to ass!
Yeah.
I think that's the one thing The Princess Bride is actually missing. That's what most films are missing. So think about that.
So there's that.
That'll be the subject of my film blog. I'll just do like synopses of films and then pause and be like, and this scene I think could have benefited from an old man yelling ass to ass. And it'll be called Film Thoughts at asstoass.com.
You're gonna get a lot of confused people on your website.
But I think they'll come around. I think they'll be like, oh, yeah, she's right. That is the one thing that Made in Manhattan was missing.
Well, among other things.
Well, it had Ralph Fiennes. There's a man whose name doesn't make any damn sense.
They should have more of that in movies. I don't argue with that.
Ralph Fiennes yelling ass to ass, or
that I would pay to see.
That would yes.
Are you seeing it in your head?
Yeah. Well, I'm imagining him as Voldemort in the Harry Potter movies, yelling it.
Oh, God.
Like, I don't know what the context is, but I just, you know, us to us.
There doesn't need to be a context.
Yeah. And then it just cuts to, like, a reaction shot of Harry Potter looking confused. Like, what? Voldemort, what? That just seems inappropriate. I'm sorry.
I'm leaving.
Yeah. I thought Voldemort's thing was that he was evil, not that he was just kind of creepy. Voldemort, he's just kind of weird. Hitchens. I'm sorry, listeners. This is Hitchens the dog, sometimes known as the third or forgotten co-host of Because You Can't Read All the Time. He doesn't talk much, but when he does...
You can't get that kid to shut up.
No, and it's been worse ever since Amy Winehouse.
I will say that when it happened, it made me really glad. Not glad that she was dead.
I was so glad.
I wasn't. Okay, so there was a time in my life, roughly 2007, Halloween, when I briefly considered dressing up as an Amy Winehouse zombie.
There you go.
And that would have been really unfortunate had that happened and the pictures made their way to the Facebooks and people saw them today.
See, that is not unlike my friend who the same day texted me and said, I'm thinking of going as Amy Winehouse for Halloween too soon. We're probably on some kind of watch list. We are definitely on a watch list.
I'm pretty sure we are.
I hope we're not on anybody's death watch.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, my God.
I mean, I don't see how that could be justified. Everyone likes me.
On the other hand, no publicity is bad publicity, so.
So whatever it takes, people.
So, just look for us on deathwatch.org.
It's an organization.
It is a 501c3, unlike our Amy Winehouse one, which somehow...
If it had been another couple of years, we would have made it, though.
Well, we somehow got public funding, which Erin worked that piece. I don't really know how that all came to be. She knows somebody in the public sphere.
I mean, it was just in the heady days of early 2011 before we knew anything of a debt ceiling.
Those were good times. Everybody talks about it now, and it's like, oh, man, remember a few months ago when everything was so much better? There were no problems. I had no problems in January 2011.
Just good times all around. Lots of snow.
I believe it was Christmas.
Those were the days.
It was Christmas in early 2011.
People just like to celebrate it for a long, long time.
In early 2011, you might remember, we hadn't switched over to the Gregorian calendar yet, so we were still celebrating the old Russian Orthodox Christmas, which happened several weeks later.
What do you mean, were?
I'm still celebrating it. I'm celebrating it all the time.
I mean, that's how I think Russian Orthodox Jesus would want it. So.
That's our other podcast, is Russian Orthodox Christmas All The Time.org.
It is a 501c3.
That actually, we did get nonprofit status for that. It was very complicated. Powerful Russian lobby. Was like, yes, they must have their organization for Christmas. Must happen. Must have that. Yes. And that was just the one Russian guy we talked to who runs a pawn shop by my house.
But somehow he knew someone, and
yeah,
things
and the,
happened.
The rest is history, as they say. So, yeah, that was Russian Orthodox Christmas. God bless, you know. So.
I know.
Oh, well, I know you know. Our listeners might not. I mean, they've gone to so many websites in this past, like, 20 minutes just being like, oh, they run this organization and that organization. And they run
We're
all,
just trying to pack a lot in.
They run all these additional podcasts I didn't know about incredibly specific things.
And podcasts that don't even exist yet that we have to wait a year and a half for. I mean,
We're making a lot of promises here.
See, this is the problem I got myself into.
I can see why you're counting on the Mayan apocalypse now.
Yeah, it's gonna be good times.
Is it?
Well, for me, I mean. Yeah. Anyways.
Yeah. Okay. So, Amy Winehouse, we had to end our Death Watch for those of you who were following along. It was a very well-run website, which unfortunately we took down this morning, so you can't see it, but it had a little infographic, it had animation, it had us in Amy Winehouse Beehive, it had Hitchens in his Amy Winehouse Beehive. It had a lot of stuff that's just lost to the ages now.
Yeah, there were poems and...
A lot of poems.
There was a lot of user-generated art for Amy. And there was a lot of stuff, but I mean, you know, what's done is done, and we can't live in the past, so the website has been erased off of all of the digital servers, and there's no record of it now, basically. No.
But, you know, every cloud has a silver lining. That's the other... recurring theme of this podcast, I would say. And I would like to point out that shortly after we found out Amy Winehouse, you know, had been taken from us prematurely, Tiger Woods is returning to golf, so the cycle of life continues, you know.
And I think he was really inspired because, you know, we all had to take a little look at ourselves after we heard the news of Amy Winehouse's passing. Mm-hmm. And I think for Tiger Woods especially, it was like, hey, you gotta seize the day. You gotta do what you love. You can't just get drunk in Serbia and not release a third album. So,
right, yeah, which was had happened to both of them around the same time. They were really leading parallel lives.
Yeah, there are a lot of links between the two, but that's a topic for another time.
Yeah, but no, so he realized that, you know, he couldn't keep living the way he had been. And Amy Winehouse, I really think, well, I maintain she was the one holding him back to begin with. I think that there was, you know, there was a rivalry there. I don't think I have to go into it. I think it was pretty well publicized.
Yeah, it's pretty well documented. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's interesting that you fall into that camp. I don't know.
Controversial, I know.
Yeah, it's a little soon to be laying the blame on Amy Winehouse for Tiger Woods sort of, you know, drifting away from golf. But, yeah, I think the writing's on the wall. I mean, I think it's a bold stance, but there's definitely lots of it, you know, information on the web that our listeners could look up and find to back up your argument.
Obama, I think, falls in my camp. I think he's the best publicized person that falls into this camp. You know, he's been heard to remark privately that Tiger Woods would be doing a lot better if it weren't for that damn Amy Winehouse. You know, just at various, you know, at Davos and the UN, places like that, he says things like that.
Well, yeah, you know. I mean, he has to be careful, of course, because of, you know, it's a very polarizing debate, but right. It's pretty clear where he stands.
Yeah, I think so, and I think that's what made me confident to come out in my position. Is like, well, the president has gone on record saying Amy Winehouse is what's holding Tiger Woods back, and so if it's good enough for Barack Obama, it's good enough for me, which is what I've always said.
Yeah, you've always said that.
Even before anybody knew who he was, everybody's like, what are you saying? What does that mean? What, are you crazy?
Yeah. But, you know, you really showed him when he won the presidency, so.
And then when he gave that speech at the DNC in, like, 2003 or whatever, people were like, hey, is that guy you always said that what was good enough for him was good enough for you? I know what you're talking about now.
Yeah, that must have felt good to be vindicated like that.
They're like, and I know that when you said that, it was true because I've seen you wearing almost the exact same suit. So I know that suit was good enough for him and you.
There is physical evidence of this.
Obama and I wear the same suits. We share suits.
You go to the same tailor, right?
Usually, when we're in the same town, yeah.
Which is pretty often,
which
I imagine.
The thing is, very few people have ever seen us in the same place at the same time, so there's kind of a rumor going around that we might be the same person, which I get, I do, but I'm dispelling the myth once and for all. No, Barack Obama and I equals not the same person.
Although, if you guys touch
the fabric of the universe will be rent in twain, yes. But
well,
that's for
a
different
good enough reason. Yeah.
That's for different reasons.
But that's a good reason not to be in the same place at the same time. I mean, I think that's pretty courageous of you two.
We are very courageous. That's how we met, was on a forum for courageous people on the internet.
I didn't know
that. It was like, are you brave? And then we would all just tell stories about feats of bravery, and a lot of mine and Obama's matched up, and so we just started messaging each other, and we're just kind of psyching each other up.
It's amazing that he has so much time to be on the internet like that.
Well, he used to. We were both a lot younger. The internet was still the Wild West, you know? So yeah, we would just get each other psyched about stuff. I just, the idea of being like, hey, Barack Obama, you've got this, man. You've got this. I know I do. Thank you, Maggie. Thank you.
Wow, I'm surprised he hasn't mentioned you in more speeches.
Well, because it's embarrassing to say you met your mentor online. You know, I get that.
Wow, so you're his mentor.
So, you know, he's never said it, you know, but he doesn't have to. When you're someone's mentor, you know.
It's good you have that understanding.
And, you know, when he was running for president, he said, Maggie, you have got to move. And that said to me, like, okay, you need me to go out and just sort of sit tight and be ready, you know? And it's not that he didn't need me in his campaign. He just said, hey, you should be someplace else, someplace better than here. He didn't want me to be tainted by all the political stuff, you know? I'm nonpartisan, so.
Obviously.
Mentorship knows no politics.
That's true. It's equal opportunity.
I am mentors without borders.
Okay.
I just want to point out that Doctors Without Borders doesn't rhyme.
You're right. It doesn't.
Well, because I feel like that's why they came up with it. Like, Doctors Without Borders, they kind of sound the same. They don't. It's borders, not borders.
But do you say doctors?
Technically, I should.
But you don't. So it's playing on the fact that you don't.
I would if everybody else did, but I'm scared.
I thought you were, like, on a forum for bravery. Why are you scared of saying doctor?
I was on a forum for bravery. I didn't win a medal for it. Okay?
Fair enough.
You know, it was for brave people trying to get braver.
Well, if you'd like, I'll take the bullet on this one, and I'll be the one to start saying doctors.
But then you just sound like a jerk. Well, and the thing for me about the whole bravery thing is, you know, part of the reason you need a forum is for mutual support, because maybe you're like 90% brave, but you're 10% scared about something else. And for me, the one place in which I am not brave is I don't like to say certain words. I feel uncomfortable pronouncing certain words. And as evidenced by the fact that I will not order the moons over my hammy platter.
Yeah, I feel like we've had a discussion about this before.
We did, but I think it was one of the ones that got recorded over.
So, nice.
Yeah.
Well, we can have it again, because I relate to that a lot. But I'm not afraid of sounding weird. Like, I actually feel like I'm the one who says things right, even when I know I'm going against the grain. And one of my examples for that is the name Roosevelt.
Yeah, that's weird.
But that's how it looks.
Yeah, but nobody right? says that.
But that's how it looks, and that's how you should probably say it. So I'm going to say it like that.
My rule for names, if the person whose name it is pronounces it one way, that's how I pronounce it. Because in particular what bothers me is when people with like Hispanic last names don't give their name the Hispanic pronunciation, but people insist on giving it the Hispanic pronunciation. I'm like, look, they don't say that. Maybe that's what's technically right, but that's not how they pronounce their own name, so cut it out. You know, like, if your name's, like, Villalobos, but you say Villalobos, and everybody's like, hello, Mr. Villalobos, and you're like, no, it's Villalobos. They're like, yes, but in Spain, I'm like, yeah, I know, but in America, I call myself Villalobos. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up.
And if your last name is Wolfhouse, you get to do whatever you want, in my opinion.
Well, that is undisputed. But yeah, I don't know. I can see that. But I mean, what do you do if all of the people with that last name are dead?
If all the Villalobos are dead?
Or all the Roosevelts are dead.
I was going to say, was there some kind of disaster I don't know about? Are all the Roosevelts dead? I mean, they don't, I guess Theodore and, he had kids, but, you know, FDR didn't. But Teddy did. Didn't any of his kids survive to pass on his name?
Well, if they did, they're not around to correct me and how to pronounce the name.
So visit our website, roosevelt.org, in which we attempt to find members of the Roosevelt clan to dispel, to do some myth-busting for us. Aaron...
And to find... Yeah?
Aaron has a podcast called Roosevelt Finder.
Roosevelt Finder.
That's right, Roosevelt Finder. And every episode, every week, it's like, well, folks, another dead end.
Well, I went to the supermarket. No one there.
This time.
Maybe next week.
Different supermarket. Maybe I'll try Trader Joe's next time. They weren't at Kmart, so.
You know I'm in Kmart all the time, so.
The Roosevelts, they go to Super Kmart.
That's where I've been going wrong.
What, you've just been going to the regular Kmarts?
Yeah.
I could have told you that. Anybody goes to the Super Kmarts.
All the celebrities and royalty.
All the royal celebrities. That's why I'm always going to Kmart. I'm hoping my ship will come in. You know, I'm hoping I'll meet a royal celebrity or just a plain kind.
Just a normal one.
A normal royal or celebrity. And just be like, oh, hey, is this my ship coming in? Are you my ship? Can you help me find a Roosevelt?
Do you know any of Teddy Roosevelt's kin? I said it the right way that time.
You did. I noticed that. It
made me uncomfortable.
Your whole thing's imploding like a house of cards. A house of cards. And, like, not the good kind. The old kind that were really made out of paper.
Hmm.
The very old kind of cards. Maybe they just disintegrate into dust when you touch them with your hands.
That'd be kind of cool. Or glitter.
Glitter cards?
Yeah, they have those, right?
They should. I would play all the card games then. Right now I don't play any because the cards aren't fabulous enough.
That's always stopping me from playing cards.
Yeah, people are like, oh, Maggie, you want to play Kings? I'm like, nah, these cards are pretty boring.
I mean, it's that and my general aversion to losing that makes me stop playing cards, because I can never remember the rules, and I get angry.
I'm glad that's not just me.
No, it's me too, and it's not just cards, it's board games, it's mini golf.
Oh my
God. There's a lot that I just stay away from.
Yeah, no, me too, and people are like, well, you're obviously very bright, why do you struggle so much with the rules of games that, like, everybody else seems to learn? Like, why can you not do that? I've been called Reverse Rain Man before. Because, like, I was playing Bunko. I don't know if you've ever played Bunko. Could not for the life of me understand what was going on. But people kept explaining to me, no, you're winning, you're winning. And I did. I won all this stuff. And they're just like, wow, you're like Reverse Rain Man.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what happens to me, especially with board games. Like, I have no idea what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, I win.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, why? What? Like, I'm happy I did, but I couldn't replicate that. But then I do. It's really, like, I don't have any explanation.
Yeah, I'm just really glad that it's not just me, because people, like, I've gone through so much hatred and laughter and mockery, and, you know, at least I'm not the only one, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Well, I guess the only caveat to that is we can never play a game together.
I think we should. I think when we do our joint podcast where we're actually in the same place at the same time, it should be recorded over a game of some card game or other, so people get to hear us, like, hash out the rules together.
And get them wrong, I'm sure.
Right, yeah, and then it'll be really great to try and determine a winner because there won't be a third party to explain who won.
We'll both win, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it just really always bothers me because, You know, like, I can watch a football game with, like, a 10-year-old who can be like, oh, my God, did you see what just happened there with the EastEnders and the... You know, I don't even know the parts. I just call them soap opera names. And I'm like, no, I don't know. How are you 10? Like, clearly this is not that complicated because there's, like, a 10-year-old telling me what just happened. And I don't know. It's like one time my dad and my husband were talking about football and they were talking about the Bengals, but I thought they meant like the Walk Like the Egyptian band.
That's exactly what I would have thought.
Yeah, they were like, oh, the Bengals, man, what happened there? And I was just like, I know, right? They just had like, they just walk like an Egyptian? And they both looked at me like I was insane. And I was like, what? Did they do some other really well-known song that I don't know about? And they're like, no, are you still being serious right now?
I mean, that's a pretty obvious, I don't know.
I think so.
I would be following.
I hate to perpetuate a stereotype here that women don't know anything about sports, but I would say that in the case of these particular women, that is true.
That is very true.
I don't know. Half the time, I don't know what's going on. And that's just in regular life.
I've actually been to live sporting events as well. And I go and I sit down and then everyone gets all into it. And I'm like, wait, there's pretzels and beer.
Hot dogs, also hot dogs.
And so I order my junk food and then I'm happy for a while. And then
I just imagine you sitting there sated with your belt buckle undone with like a satisfied smile on your face.
That's basically what it's like. And then at some point, you know, some guy with like a Cubs yarmulke will walk by and I'll be like, whoa, and I'll be really excited. And then someone will be like, whoa, so we ain't going to win this one. And I'm like, wait, what?
Well, first of all, you're at a Cubs game, so of course you're not going to win. But
yeah.
Second of all, yeah, the thing is, sports, it ain't all about the yarmulkes. I learned that very quickly.
I would tend to disagree. I am constantly fascinated by the yarmulkes I see at public sporting events.
I guess I don't go to enough sporting events. Also, in Texas, you don't see a lot of those.
Yeah, I guess Chicago, this is a Chicago thing, but yeah, so it basically combines, like, public sporting events. I don't understand the sports, I don't generally pay attention, but it does combine my loves of eating junk food,
mm-hmm.
drinking booze, and seeing Jewish men, so.
I would have to say that sounds like an enjoyable afternoon to me. Like, why muddy it up with the sports?
Exactly.
And that's how I feel. Like, I'll be having a perfectly great time at a football game or something, just sort of chatting with friends, you know, and then a play will happen that gets everybody all excited or angry. And I'm like, well, you just ruined a perfectly good conversation I was having. You know, one time I did get tossed up in the air at a college football game, which was fun. A bunch of guys were like, hey, let's throw her in the air. And they did it a few times. And I got some pictures and we high-fived. That was... And I don't know why football games can't be more stuff like that.
Yeah, I agree. Like, if it could just be, like, an outdoor festival.
Yeah, why don't people do that anymore? I mean, nowadays festivals have to have a point. You know, it has to be the Margarita Festival or the Italian-American Festival. But it used to be it was enough just to get everybody in one place. Now... And now there has to be some sort of reason. And I just feel like, really, I have a great time at public sporting events between the junk food and the, you know, public, you know, the camaraderie with your fellow citizens. And then the sports part is always just like, oh, can we hurry it up so I can get back to what a great time I was having, you know?
Yeah, totally.
And at least at the racetrack, at least at the track, you know, the sporting part is over very quickly.
Yeah, I feel like the racetrack is more a sort of meeting place.
Which is why you can find me at the tracks pretty much any weekend when I'm not at the fights.
You have a varied lifestyle.
I'm a 1930s gangster.
I'm glad you clarified that.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know that about me, but that is actually my job, Monday through Friday.
And you carry a lot of it into your personal life, I take it.
And then I just like it so much that, yeah, and no, I get comp time for that.
Oh, that's
good. You know, if I spend my weekend at a fight or a race, it's like, oh, well, she was working overtime, you know, come in late on Monday or something.
Yeah, and you get your expenses paid for all those bets that went sour, so.
Yeah, you know, it's really the best job ever.
Glad to hear it.
Fell into it right out of college. Not really sure how. Just started out running errands for a guy, and the next thing I knew. So, that's... So, kids, stay in school.
Well, but it's also all about who you know.
Right. I mean, it's 50-50. 50 staying in school, 50 knowing someone when you get out of school.
So basically, just go to school, but meet as many people as possible.
Network. I think that's called networking.
Yeah, whatever.
So, yeah. So we talked about Amy Winehouse. Tiger Woods was technically our second topic. That kind of fizzled out, but he did return to golfing, so God bless. or don't. And I do have a third topic I'd like to introduce here. We have about... Yeah, we have about 20 minutes left or so. I would like to bring something up. I have a feeling about a certain topic, and Aaron, I know that you're a fan of music as an entity, so I would be interested to hear your thoughts. Mine are that it's about country music, okay? And my own thoughts, and they're not popular, again, down the further west you go, which is out where I live, people are not big fans of this kind of thing. And they are, I'm not. They're not big fans of when I diss country music, basically. And I feel like country music, first of all, the theme's so general as to be about nearly any biped. Second of all, I don't like any kind of music in which the word truck appears more than once. And third of all, the women in these things, they're either being celebrated for their wildness or being castigated for their waywardness. And I feel like this lumps women into two very weird categories.
They're actually very similar. So basically you're saying all women are wild. It's just
a matter of time before they become cheaters. Yeah, I don't know. So that's how I feel about country music, and it hasn't made me a lot of friends out here.
Well, okay. I agree with you, but I guess I would have to say that it actually took me living in London to discover this for myself, strangely enough, but... Yeah, that sort of country music is pretty hard to like, unless you're from a very specific background, I guess.
But it's not for a lot of people. That's what's so surprising. I'm surprised that this kind of music isn't just popular with a niche audience, that it's so widely enjoyed, and it's, like, inconceivable to them that you wouldn't like it.
Well, but at the same time, so this is what I would say to that. I guess it's the same argument for, like, you know, as someone who lives, like, in a bigger city that's largely liberal and young, I guess it's the same argument for how people, you know, most people I meet here would say, oh, God, I could never enjoy, like, you know, I would never be a member of the NRA, yet there are many people who are members of the NRA. You know, it's one of those things where, like, it's one of the many divides in our country where, yeah, there are a lot of country music lovers in the U.S., but there's also a lot of people who really just don't understand that. And I feel like maybe you're just in an area where a lot of people do like it. The caveat being that that's one very specific sort of what I guess you could call country music. I don't even know that other variations are considered country music anymore, but I mean, take bluegrass or like anything that doesn't get played on CMT, that's more Americana or folksy, that's all technically considered country, but I would guess that you would maybe be a little bit more open to that stuff because they don't...
I like the Oh Brother Where Art Thou stuff. I like the bluesgrassy stuff. Yeah, that I have no problem with. It's, again, the lyrics that are so general as to be about any biped. And I would like to give you an example. Okay. When you pull up in your big old truck, I can't climb up in it fast enough, 'cause I'm a shotgun girl along for the ride. Yeah, dashboard drummer on a Saturday night, cranking up Waylon, Willie, and Merle, so throw one arm around me now, honey, we'll sling that gravel just like Bonnie and Clyde. I'd ride with you all around the world, 'cause boy, I'm your shotgun girl.
Oh, it just sounds gross.
It's everything wrong with country. It references the trucks, you know. First of all, I can't stand pickup trucks, but it references them. Truck, not a musical word, not a word that I feel like should be sung often. And in general, like, okay, so you enjoy riding in the passenger seat of a car. Like, that's what that boils down to.
Yeah, and I mean... there are other songs that talk about riding a car, like Tracy Chapman, You've Got a Fast Car, but there is something poetic behind that. There's nothing poetic behind this.
Yeah, and it's car, not truck. Truck is not a musical word, you know?
I mean, it rhymes with things that you don't necessarily want to sing about.
Yeah, I don't know.
Duck?
There's not a piece of... Yeah, I think we could go down this road not very far and find some pretty comical words. There's not a piece of road around here we ain't burned down except that stretch that heads out of town. Yeah, whenever you need to feel that freedom, leave a little room for me, 'cause I'm a shotgun girl, etc., etc. And it just goes on like that. There is precisely one verse in this song.
Wow.
There's one verse, yeah. And it's the first one in the song, and I haven't mentioned that one yet because it has nothing to do with the rest of Shotgun Girl. It starts out, yeah, yeah, I like to hold your hand up high on the Ferris wheel, and how front porch swinging with you makes me feel. Yeah, but when you climb up in your big old truck, and then it goes on like that over and over again until the end of the song.
So, essentially what the songwriter is doing is just... bringing up a bunch of, like, general American images, like, riding in your truck, being on a Ferris wheel, sitting on the porch, and trying to connect it to an emotion that's unclear.
They're also called the Jane Deere girls, like John Deere tractors, but, like, the girl kind, and it's Deere spelled D-E-A-R.
You know, even before you said that, I assumed they were going for something like that.
And, you know, people make fun of me for liking ska. Like, I don't think that's fair. I feel like I should be allowed to like ska if this many people like crap like this.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Everyone has their, like,
Yeah, but ska is considered, like, a weird niche thing that you just never outgrew. Like, oh, well, Maggie's still stuck on ska, what are you gonna do? Whereas everybody's like, oh, you know, there's thousands and thousands, millions of people in this country who like country, and no one's gonna give them a hard time. But, like, they could go their whole lives without anybody ever giving them a hard time about it, depending on if they ever move or not.
Yeah. I mean... I guess the two things I would say about that are that, one, everyone has their, like, uppity, you know, music opinions, which is part of why I was so quick to, like, clarify that all of country is not like that, because country means a lot of different things, and it does bother me when people say, I like everything, but country. And then you're like, well, what about Americana and
bluegrass?
And they're like, I hate everything that's country. And you're like, okay, well, apparently you've heard it all.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think everyone, so when some people hear ska, they're probably just like, oh, ha ha, like I've relegated this to one box in my head and therefore, you know, like people are just weird about music.
So you're
saying
that this is my problem for not liking country. Like I should just live and let live and be like, it's just the flip side of your ska problem.
No, I'm just saying that, well, you didn't let me get to my second point.
Oh, sorry.
So second point being that I think there are a lot of people who feel the same way about that specific sort of country. And I think, you know, as much as I like pop music, I think it's similar to pop music in that it plays to a very specific demographic and it recycles imagery and it recycles emotion and, you know, artists, and it's not necessarily a valuable art form.
Thank you. Okay.
I do think that, you know, in pop music, it's easier to, you know, maybe because it is a little bit more mainstream, it's easier to get somebody who's maybe innovative because they're just, you know, they're able to use the commercialism to their advantage.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas country, it is a lot easier to hate on it because the whole point is that you're not supposed to innovate. You're supposed to keep recycling. You're supposed to be this one thing. So I don't like it either. And I don't see that there is much of a redeeming quality to any of it.
Yeah, Shotgun Girl, basically Jane Dear Girls, if you're listening, worst song ever. I would also like to say that the way your name is spelled when it's in all caps as it appears on the lyrics website, it looks like the Jana Dear Girls, and I thought maybe you were from India or something.
So there.
And that kind of excused it. I was like, oh, well, they're Indian, and they just are enthusiastic about country, so it's kind of cute now. But now that I know you're not, it's back to being sad.
Could you imagine if a bunch of, like, Bollywood people or, like, K-pop people started doing country? That would be amazing.
I would love that. I would be all about that. I would support them in any way, shape, or form that they need it. I'd start another 501c3 nonprofit.
And podcast.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much all I do when I'm not being a 1930s gangster is podcasting about different niche interests of mine.
It's really what life is all about.
Yeah, I am. I'm actually a hoarder. I haven't left my house in over a year. Erin's really in for a shock when she comes in September and I weigh 500 pounds.
Well, that would explain why you're not coming here, so.
I just can't make it up to Chicago this year, Erin. Don't ask any more questions.
And maybe Hitchens isn't just one dog, it's several dogs.
Yeah, Hitchens is really a composite character.
You just have feral dogs running around your property defending you from the outside world.
Yeah, it's scary. The world is a cruel place, I understand.
You wouldn't know because you haven't left your house, but...
I stopped going outside a long time ago. I've been burnt before, so.
Literally by the sun, so.
The one time I went outside, it burnt me to a crisp, and so I said, well, I'm never going out there again. And then
I think that's for the best.
Yeah, so I spent a lot of time organizing dog parades with all of my many dogs.
They all wear beehive wigs.
Dogs slowly tripping around my house while my phone plays Rehab.
It's really just a memorial to Amy Winehouse.
It's a dignified tribute.
Yeah.
The dogs are very well trained. I mean, I do nothing but train them all day long. So, yeah, they just kind of troop around in a circular fashion while my phone's like, they tried to make me go to rehab, and I said no. yeah, so. I'm a sick person.
The great irony is when they find you, they probably will send you to rehab.
Well, I mean, what, you're implying that I'm drunk when I organize these dog parades?
No, I mean, like, occupational therapy.
Like, yeah. They tried to make me go to occupational therapy, and I said no.
You're going to need to learn how to reuse your limbs, and they're going to have to acclimate you to society. Are you laughing or crying?
I'm laughing because it's true. I'm as I'm sitting here with a bottle of Corona in my hand. Yeah, wouldn't that be sad if I had a problem?
Maggie, you can tell us. It's okay.
That's the first step to solving a problem is admitting it on the internet, right?
Yeah, preferably in a podcast.
Mm-hmm. So it's documented, you know, so it can be brought up and played for your employers, stuff like that.
Well, and also, in case you ever forget, like, you're like, I've never had a problem. Somebody can be like, actually, this is a recording of you saying you have a problem.
The problem with that is, we discussed last episode that Maggie isn't my real name. It's just the, you know, name of the radioactive person who bit me and gave me all my powers. So you could play that and I could conceivably distance myself from it by saying, nope, Maggie, that ain't me.
Okay, but we also have that explanation on file now. So I think we're pretty safe.
Wow, this is like a Mobius strip. There is no beginning or end.
That was the point, right?
Like, that'll be what I say when you play all of these things for me and you have an answer for all of my excuses.
That's what I'm here to do.
And then you'll be like, you said this would happen, and then you play me going, it's like a Mobius strip.
Yep. And then Leonardo, that's really why we're doing this, so.
And then Leonardo DiCaprio's like, I just want to go back to my wife and kids. Am I dreaming? I don't know.
Oh, man, I hope that that's what happens, because then I'm going to meet Tom Hardy.
Oh, yeah, Inception. That would be good if that really happened. I really hope that comes to pass for me.
I'm just saying, if it gets me, you know, that much closer to Tom Hardy, star of Bronson.
Then... Ah, yes. Well, we all have our proclivities.
Yeah.
That would be John Ritter in Bad Santa. Great movie. Look it up.
Never heard of it.
You are kidding, right?
Yeah.
Okay, thank God. Like, otherwise I'm going to have to start a Bad Santa awareness podcast.
And 501c3 organization.
Also a nonprofit charity. In which I travel to the far reaches of the globe to isolated areas and tell people about Bad Santa.
Someone has to do it.
I also teach them sustainable farming practices.
And you give them microloans.
Yeah, I do a lot of stuff. I'm a really good person. The great thing about the sustainable farming thing is I'm learning along with the people. I don't know anything about it. I just sort of go and crack open a book and say, all right, so it says here, can anybody read this? Does anybody want to take a look and verify?
You're basically just there to supervise.
In return, they teach me the rules to card games.
Well, I can see that it's a fruitful pursuit for you.
And then I can leave feeling better that they know about Bad Santa.
And farming.
And farming. After a long day of farming, you can sit down and watch Bad Santa. And for the really advanced people, we do a, you know, we watch Bad Santa and then we watch Bad Teacher and we talk about the similarities and whether it's possible for women to really ever be funny in film.
The conclusion is it is not possible.
It is not I mean, if I thought women could be funny, I wouldn't have started this podcast.
This is a very serious podcast.
This is serious women talking about serious things. Not some funny lady thing.
Yeah, no. What? If anyone's laughing at this, then I'm appalled.
If women were meant to be laughed at, they wouldn't have been able to have children, because no one likes to think of their mother being laughed at.
And nobody even dares laugh at their mother. That's what, the ultimate.
What brave soul among you can claim to have ever laughed at a mother?
Oh, dear.
Yeah, so think about that, you heathens. But, yeah, so we're down to the last, you know, few minutes for tonight. We talked about Amy Winehouse, we talked about Tiger Woods, we talked about the country music, the bad kind, not the bluegrass kind, which I just now realized I kept calling bluesgrass. sorry. But yeah, so we typically like to end these with a discussion in which we pick a current event and come up with a scenario upon which one might be able to film a pornographic film. So, again, serious ladies talking about serious stuff. So, Erin, any current events you can think of?
So, I'll set the scene.
Oh, okay.
It's late on a Sunday night.
Oh.
And it's getting down to the wire. They need to come up with a compromise. So that's the scene.
Okay, so our scene for this porno, it's late Sunday night, debt ceiling, gotta figure something out, gotta hash out this budget. We got all the Congress folk just, you know, all bored and hot and bothered in Washington late of a Sunday eve. Am I right?
And, you know, tempers are flaring.
I've been in Congress.
So, I don't know. I mean, I just think all these frustrated people in one place, it's hot.
Maybe
they're knocking back a few cold ones, and things are getting a little crazy, so.
I like that all of these pornos end with us not really actually positing a pornographic scenario, just sort of vaguely implying that a group of people might want to have sex.
I mean, we're just leading everyone to the, you know.
This is nominally, you know, we're not trashy, we're not crass, you know, that's not what we're about here. So we opt for the Hitchcockian, no jokes, philosophy here, in which it's best left to the imagination. It's scarier when it, or more erotic.
Or both,
depending on what you're into. When it's left to the imagination of you, the audience, am I right?
Yes.
So never has the debt ceiling been so sexy.
I mean, it's also prescient because, I don't know, you just think about, like, any time you've been having difficulty working with a group of people and tempers are raised and you're just like, I hate you so much. And then you're, like, going to that point of no return of, like, ruining everything you've worked for. And then you just look up and you're like, I must have you.
Well, it's obvious we work in different fields.
For any of my coworkers listening to this, that's never happened.
I was going to say, Erin is a scientist.
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing I imagine happens in science offices. And I just got called up for jury duty on Friday, and so I'm kind of wondering if, I'm kind of nervous, I'm kind of like, first of all, what if it's like a 12 Angry Men scenario where it is hot and everybody's irritable and it's really dramatic. You know, I'm not equipped for that, and they'd probably make me the lead juror. And then the other thing is, what if it's like the crime of the century? You know, what if they need a juror for some, like, high-profile murder case? And I'm like, I don't have time for that.
Well, you can make the case that you need to be available to provide for Hitchens in both...
mind and spirit?
Yeah, like, you have to be there to be his caretaker as well as provide for him financially, so you can make that sort of argument.
Do they let you reschedule that?
I don't know.
Like, if you're not available that week, is it possible to be like, look, I have nothing against jury duty in principle, you know, can I go another time?
Well, I don't know how it works in every jurisdiction, but I know that in California, when it happened to me, I was able to say, because I was back for a summer, but they wanted me to come in after I would have been leaving for London, so I just had to say, I'm actually going out of town because I go to school somewhere else, and it would be a big inconvenience to, you know, change my schedule, and it's not really possible. So they said, okay, well, we'll put you off for another 6 months or so.
Do you have to prove you're leaving the country, or could I just say that?
I didn't have to prove it. Ooh. So maybe you got a way out.
Jury duty's sounding pretty good now. It's not even like my real job where people actually expect me to prove stuff.
Yep, it's pretty sweet.
I'm going to talk about this on my podcast, Ways Jury Duty is Better Than My Job.com.
That's pretty sad if it is.
I don't know. I've never done jury duty, and I do like my job, so I don't know. I hope if it is better than my job, I'm becoming a full-time juror.
I wish they would let you do that.
That would be, you know, it would solve a lot of their problems. People wouldn't be like, oh, I got called up for jury duty, because they'd be people that are on the books as jurors, and they're like, oh, I got this.
Yeah, like, just get a bunch of homeless people.
Yes. Tried by a jury of your homeless peers.
I'm just saying, like, you'd get them all off the streets.
Yeah, and well, the statistics have shown that hardly any homeless people are mentally ill, so
that would be... It's really incredible how capable all of them are.
Yeah, so that's... We have so many good ideas here. I just hope, you know, the government is listening.
I'm sure they are, after all our death watches.
But they're like, yeah, we can't even be mad. They have so many great ideas. That's where we get half our ideas.
Yeah, you heard it here first, government.
Yeah, like cutting defense spending. That was us. Aaron was like, you know what I'm really sick of? Tanks and planes and ships. Just get rid of them.
Just get rid of them all.
I say get rid of them. And they were like, why did that never occur to us? So
yeah, we hold a lot of power.
You can thank us for that, unless you are against the defense spending cuts, in which case that was not our idea, and we actually spoke out against it several times.
Yeah, just listen to different podcasts. It changes daily, so.
So, get excited about me being on your next jury. My opinion is very malleable.
I think all you have to do is play this podcast.
I know. And they'd be like, you know what, you're good. Tune in for when I have a podcast in which I just discuss the details of the case.
Next week, why I'm voting against.
This week, I am voting guilty. And then it's like, next week, find out why my vote is going to be not guilty.
That's Maggie.
And the prisoner is just listening in jail, like, what is she going to do? I don't know.
Oh, why did they let that prisoner listen? It seems cruel.
I don't know. I don't know. Maybe he was a listener before the crime.
No, that can't be, because all of our listeners are upstanding citizens.
Maybe we drove him to a life of crime. Maybe in an attempt to make a homeless Kate Middleton, he got caught brewing his own moonshine.
Oh, that's likely true.
In which case, I can't be on the jury because it's a conflict of interest.
See, you're just finding all sorts of ways out of this.
I think I should be able to at least postpone it.
In the very least.
I should at least be able to get moved to a different case. Or what if I'm just like, oh, I can't do it, I'm actually the Hamburglar. I would identify too closely with the victim, or the I guess if the victim was a burglar who stole hamburgers. I met with the criminal.
Well, maybe the victim is similar to the Hamburglar, but got beat viciously by the police when he was discovered.
So it's like they're trying a crooked cop who beat a Hamburglar to death?
Yeah.
I hope it's something like that.
You know, you did posit that it would be the case of the century, and
yeah,
I think that's pretty close. So.
Crooked cop beats Hamburglar. Grimace is brought in as a witness. Does anybody even remember those characters? Like, when kids today, if I was like, oh, the Hamburglar and Grimace, and, you know, would they just know Ronald McDonald?
I think they would probably just foam at the mouth and turn back to their bright box of video games, and their eyes would turn red.
Is that what kids do now?
As far as I can tell.
Yeah, I don't know a lot of kids. Somebody asked me how old somebody's kid was today, and I was like, I don't know, child-aged?
Not old enough to vote yet.
The age of children? I don't know. Oh, but I know they don't know who the Hamburglar is. Which is what made it so hard for him to get anyone to intervene while he was getting beaten by a cop. People were like, well, who's this guy in black and white striped pajamas and a mask with a hamburger? I'm not going to step in to help him.
He's a weirdo.
Yeah, freak. Yeah, come in here stealing our hamburgers. So, yeah. If it is the Hamburglar, then I won't ask to postpone. I will ask to be the key juror or the key witness, one of the two. So I get a choice.
You should probably clear up your understanding of the terminology before you go in.
My understanding of the legal system is shaky at best.
But I'm here to do my job.
And I just hand them my card and it says, Maggie, law woman. And they're like, did you get these made up just for the case? And I'll just blush modestly.
You're always doing that.
As is my wont. They gotta know, let's ask that modestly blushing juror. I'll be like, the jury finds the defendant not guilty. And everyone will burst into applause as I blush modestly and wave.
It's your moment in the sun.
Yeah. And people just start chanting, Maggie, Maggie. Because the trials are all about the jurors.
And they definitely tell you the full name of every juror.
Is it true that you can bring knitting or something? I've seen that on TV before. I'm wondering, can I bring something to do to keep my mind and my hands occupied? Maybe a crossword?
Yeah, you definitely can.
Is that true?
Yes.
Oh, well, this is looking better and better. Again, better than my real job where they won't let you bring knitting or crossword puzzles to do when you're bored.
Didn't realize those were your twin passions, but okay.
I do actually like crossword puzzles. I don't know how to knit. True confessions.
Yeah, I don't know how to knit either.
Crossword puzzles are a good time, though. I mean, they're not the best time you'll ever have, but they come through in a pinch. I will say that for them.
I prefer Sudoku.
So you never got into that. Too many numbers.
Yeah, I usually stop halfway through.
Yeah, see, crosswords are good because I can be like, oh, I know that. I've read that book. Or, oh, I know that obscure poli-. You know, it lets me feel smart about myself.
Yeah, I never feel that way. I'm usually, it's the same thing for me where I, as Sudoku, where I get halfway through, then I'm like, oh, unless it's in People magazine, then we're good.
I never do the crossword in People. It's too stupid. I'm talking like New York Times or, you know, the in-flight magazine. Yeah, so classy lady right here. But this is kind of turning into an Andy Rooney diatribe, so let's move on. We've done our porno, we've talked about our topics, you know, so tune in next week. I haven't forgotten about my pledge to like give the podcast its own blog and email and stuff. I just so tired all the time. But it'll happen. Just, you know, keep watching the skies.
Yeah, we'll inform you some way or another.
Yeah, you won't have to find it for yourself. So but yeah, so Aaron, if you'd like to bid the people farewell.
Fare thee well, listeners of ours.
Farewell, loyal listeners, and we will talk to you next week. Goodbye, everybody.